Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the Mum and Mama podcast, brought to you as always by the wonderful Golding Accountancy. We are golding.com. How are you? I'm good. If you've not listened to this podcast before, hi, thanks for listening. I've got endometriosis and ovarian cysts, which are very large, and basically I'm waiting to have a full hysterectomy. But every now and then I wake up or I get like pain episodes, and it's so weird because I woke up this morning and I didn't have, normally it's like someone is twisting my insides. I suppose I imagine it'd be like a Chinese burn, but it just doesn't stop and it's really intense. That's what the pain is like when it's, and that's when it's bad and it's just horrible. But I didn't really have pain. I just felt like my whole stomach was like really bloated and there was just like this weird feeling. But I just look fucked. It's so weird. Because I know, I look in the mirror and I'm like, I just don't look like myself. I don't know if it's because my body goes into some kind of, if it's tense or if it's, I don't think I slept very well, so I'm probably tired. But I just feel like, I look like I've smoked about five joints. Like I just, my whole face kind of just like goes down and my eyes are really heavy. I guess it's because I'm tired, but it's just so weird because even though I don't, touch wood, thank God, the pain's not bad. I mean, I feel fucked. I think my body just, well, I guess it's just fighting, isn't it? It's fighting against these aliens I have in me. And I suppose I'm just knackered. But I just look weird. It's just so, because I know that I'm not well because I don't look right. It's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing, these little things that, because probably to anyone else, I just look normal. Or I might just look a bit tired. But to me, I just look awful. But I've also taken some very strong painkillers, so I'm a bit like, I'm gonna chat a bit. Sorry. Anyway, but interestingly enough, so this week I had this lovely woman, Vanessa, contact me, and she's been on the Hardcore Listing podcast. She's part of the murdering sex cult, which is a Hardcore Listing thing. They're not actually murdering sex people. They're just, it's like a joke, because if you don't listen to Hardcore Listing, then Chris, one of the hosts, is doesn't paint himself ever in a very nice way with his behaviours. But anyway, she went on their podcast to talk about her autistic son. And I have to point out that she asked her son to speak about his autism on my podcast. Like, she checked everything with him, so she has got his permission to talk about this, him and their lives and everything. But yeah, so she contacted me because she wants to talk about how, what it's like to live and bring up an autistic child, and also talk about autism in general. This was all fascinating. I love learning, and even though obviously I know about autism, I don't know about her experience with it and her son's experience. But anyway, so we chatted for a good 2 hours, because I always do. She herself has also come to the conclusion that she's autistic and has ADHD. And she's had a hysterectomy because she has ovarian cysts. So I had the best 2 hours because I learned so much. But anyway, so this, I've split this into two parts. The first part is her talking about her son and her experiences. Like, he didn't go to school for about 3 years. There was an incident. And I mean, it just sounds absolutely horrific. The failings, how good the support is, but also how bad it is, and how it just seems to be a lack of communication with anything like this. It's like people just don't talk to each other. So, but yeah, it's really interesting. So this is the first half. She's going to talk about that side of things. And then next week, she talks about her own experience with autism, ADHD, and also menopause and hysterectomies and everything. Yeah, so I do hope you enjoy it. If there is anything that we discussed that you want to talk to us about or ask us about, then please get in touch. Vanessa will be more than happy to talk to you. I will share a link to her social media. But you can always just get in touch with me and I can put your questions to her. But yeah, anyway, enjoy this first bit and I'll see you on the other side.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Work. Work.
Look, right, what do you think of my sofa? So I got, have you seen those adverts on Instagram for like the sheet things that they put over the sofa?
Yeah.
This is what this is. I mean,
oh, it's fabulous.
It's because I had a puppy for a little while.
Aww.
And she chewed all the corners of the sofa and I couldn't find anything to just stick on the corner.
Yeah.
Which you think is not bad.
You'd think there'd be something, wouldn't you? Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, and I kept getting these adverts on Instagram, and I'm such a sucker for.
So am I.
And I'm like,
absolutely.
And every time I'm like, don't stop buying it because it's always shit. But I got them, and
that's really funky, though.
They're a bit,
I like how you've got
the
matching cushions as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. My sofas are old. Like, they're as old as my eldest daughter, who's 11.
Oh,
but they're fine. They're still really comfortable.
Yeah.
They've obviously started to look a bit. But to get them, my mum and dad got their sofas recovered and it cost them about $3,000 or something ridiculous. And I was like,
you can buy new sofas for that.
Yeah. I was like, and I don't, we're not staying here forever. So there's no point buying furniture. Do you know what I mean? So I was like, what can I do? So,
and do you know what? While ever the kids are young as well, it's just not worth it.
Exactly.
It really isn't. We wanted wood floors in our living room from moving in. And then we thought about milk stains and Ribena stains and all this stuff. And we literally, my son's now 15 and we got the wood flooring last year. We've been living in this house 20 odd years. And it was just a case of, you know what? Until we settled.
Yeah.
But it's taken us 20 years to get settled.
Yeah. But it does take a long time, doesn't it?
It does.
How many kids have you got?
Just one.
Okay.
Yeah. He's 15. He's sat upstairs actually as we speak.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Is he at school?
Yes, but in his own way.
Okay.
So he's autistic and has ADHD. And school was okay. It was never his favourite place to go, but it was okay because he was with his mates.
Yeah.
But as soon as it got to senior school, it just all fell to pieces. And
why? Did his friends go with him? Or is it
yeah, his friends went with him. But
yeah. So
even from him being very young, we knew change was difficult.
Okay.
So we actually chose to send him. This is before we knew anything about what was going on.
Yeah.
And so we chose to send him to the biggest school in our town.
Yeah.
Because, for example, the junior schools range from the one James went to, which has, in a year, would have roughly 90 to 100 kids. So there'd be three classes per year, down to one that he could have gone to that has four.
Four in a year. Kids.
Yeah, four kids.
Four kids.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we purposefully sent him to the biggest ones because we knew that to go from a year with four kids to going to the local senior school, which had 2,000 kids
in, would
just be huge.
Yeah.
So he was struggling at school anyway. He, as I say, he's autistic. He has massive anxiety issues. He's also dyslexic. So school was never his easy place.
Yeah.
So then we did everything we could with transitions, and he had extra transitions and blah, blah, blah. But basically, he went into this massive building of 2,000 kids, and suddenly, instead of one teacher to get to know him, there was whatever, 8, 9, 10 different teachers.
Yeah.
And he, with his teachers, really needed to feel like they knew him.
Yeah.
And that just doesn't happen at senior school. You are literally just a name on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, whichever way you look at it, the senior school he went to is very academic.
Yeah.
And James is a bright kid. He just struggles getting things down on paper.
Yeah.
So he went into Y7, seemed to be coping, and then it got to the back end of Y7 and we started, he was actually ill. He had a weird anemia thing that meant the last kind of half term of Y7, he was off more than he was there anyway.
Yeah.
And then when it did get to him going back just to finish the year off, the symptoms that he was getting due to the anemia, which was now kind of sorted, started drifting into tummy aches and headaches and things that you can't test for.
Yeah.
Now, I've absolutely no doubt that these symptoms were real.
Yeah, yeah.
Never questioned them because he's one thing with autistic children is lying is not easy.
Yeah.
But whether they had a medical background or a stress background, different conversation. So anyway, we get to the end of Y7 and I just thought, well, that's fine. He'll calm down over the 6 week holidays and we'll go back. Y8 will be a new leaf. I think he managed about 2 weeks before things began to drop to pieces again. And his anxiety was kicking in, and that's when we knew he wasn't coping, and we were going to have to start looking at getting the SEN, the special educational needs team, more involved than they were. And they did a lot of things to try and help. But a lot of things that they were saying, so the SEN team were amazing. We had the SEN teacher. She was brilliant. And his pastoral head of house was fantastic. And we'd have all these meetings and yes, you can do this and yes, you can do that. For example, one of the things they came up with is that he could have a sort of little card, and it'd have maybe red on one side and yellow on the other. And so if the yellow side was up, he was feeling fine and everything was okay.
Yeah.
But if he needed a break from the class, they basically said, all you need to do is turn it over to red and then just make no fuss, just get up and go and stand outside in the hall for a little while.
Yeah.
So the first time he did that, his teacher followed him out and went, what the hell do you think you're doing walking out of class? So he stood there. He has an incredibly strong sense of justice,
yep,
and unfairness.
Yeah.
But he also, being shouted at and being chastised like that, he just wants the world to open up and swallow him. He hates it with a passion. So he'd got all these feelings of, well, she's just shouted at me, but also she shouted at me unfairly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah? So trust levels of, well, it's all right if the SEN says this is going to happen, but the teachers won't read the email. The teachers don't know me.
Yeah.
We'd even done, you can get these things called one-page profiles, which you can print off the internet as templates. And it's just kind of, here's a picture of me, here's my name, here's what I like, here's what I don't like. Here's how to realise that I'm not coping very well. Here's what to do if I'm not coping very well.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like a little introduction. It was plainly obvious that none of the teachers had read any of those.
But I don't understand how. I mean, I do appreciate, obviously, in senior school it's different because they have so many kids.
That's the excuse you get surely, every time.
But they must be aware of the kids who do have. What's the right way of saying it? It's not special. Is it special needs or?
Yeah, it's more SEN kids, so special SEN educational kid, needs. Yeah.
Surely they must be aware if they're going to have a SEN kid in their class, because obviously that is going to affect everything, isn't it? If you know.
Yeah, but this is it. You see, when they see that they've got an SEN kid in their class, what they expect is a child that's going to get up, storm around, throw chairs out of windows, and be really disruptive. Okay. Now with James, he does entirely the opposite. He shuts down.
Yeah.
So if I was to say to a teacher, the way to notice that he was feeling uncomfortable, not right, is when he looks like he's being quiet and doing his work. James as a character is quite a cheeky kind of chatty, that's when he's comfortable. When he's taking the mickey out of you, if he's ever cheeky to you, that is like the biggest compliment he can ever give you.
Yeah.
If he takes the mickey out of your hairstyle or calls you a little old lady because he's 15 and that's what he does, you know, that's like, you know, that is, I mean, that's what he calls my mum, is Nanan. He don't call her Nanan, it's the little old lady. It's a little old lady coming round today. And that's him. He's such a cheeky little kid, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm like, look, when he's happy, that's when you're having to just remind him not to talk to his friends. He needs to get on with his work. That's when he's happy.
Yeah.
But because he would just literally sit there kind of like looking as if he's writing, he'd just fade into the background. Yeah. So then if he was to suddenly get up and walk out, that was then classed as the bad behaviour.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, anyway, yeah. It's, so.
It's an impossible situation, is it? Because.
It is.
Do they not have people with them in senior school? Do they not have, if they need an aide, does that happen in senior school?
To get that kind of help, you have to get what's called an EHCP. So that is granted to you by your local educational authority.
Right.
It stands for Educational Healthcare Plan.
Yeah.
Right. So I was told continually, luckily I had friends, I joined a support group for parents with children with an additional need. So I had all these friends that were like, have you not applied for an EHCP yet? And so I'd go to school, back in junior school even, and say, look, is it worth getting an EHCP for James? And continually they'd go, you won't get one because he behaves himself.
Right.
And because they can't tick the boxes of, yes, he's disrupting the class and doing this and doing that and doing the other, I was always told that I would never get one, no matter what. So, and the EHCP is what then gives, it basically sets out in concrete what your child's needs are.
Yeah.
and how the school kind of legally has to deal with them.
Okay.
So it gives us as parents something to go, look, you're not doing this.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's set out in his plan, you need to be doing this.
And there's okay. no, because that is the, that's the case with so many things, isn't it? This is the criteria that you have to fit. And if yeah. you do not fit that criteria, then you're on your own. And
absolutely.
It's like you're dealing with people.
Yeah. Well, as far as his EHCP is concerned, we did move him to another senior school. I'll kind of go through how that worked. Yeah. But it wasn't until that SEN teacher turned around to me and said, you do realise you can actually apply for it as a parent. You don't have to rely on school applying for it. And I was like, oh, no, nobody ever told me that. So I then went through this EHCP process, which is a story into itself. I mean, I'm university educated. I've got a fantastic support group around me. I've got laptops and printers and, you know, I've written reports. I know how to do these things. That damn thing took me 40 hours to fill in. Right? And get all the information together that they
needed. Wow.
Exactly. And that's with a group of friends who initially said to me, make sure you keep every piece of paper that is ever sent to you with something on it about James. Because everything you write in that EHCP has to be backed up by something that a professional has said. So everything that I had, I couldn't write, well, at home he does this.
Yeah.
Because if a professional hasn't gone, well, he does that because of he has anxiety. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what parents think.
But how do you get that? How do you get a professional to?
Right. So let's go back to the school story because So anyway, this anxiety increased, and eventually.
So what happened when he got pulled out of the class then? Did the teacher apologise?
Nothing got done. Absolutely nothing.
Oh, really?
I don't care about the other 31 kids in that classroom. I care what happens to my child. So don't tell me it's because the teachers don't know my child.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's what you kept getting told over and over and over again. Till eventually his anxiety got to the point where he just stopped going to school. He just wouldn't go.
Yeah.
As simple as that.
So was this and happening I got all to the point time of then?
Pardon?
Was this happening all the time? Like any time that he wanted to leave?
He didn't go to school for 3 years.
Oh, wow. Was that year one that he stopped going?
It was year eight.
Year
so
eight.
Partway
yeah,
through
okay.
year, well, yeah, yeah, quite at the beginning of year eight. There was a little, he had an incident with a lad at school that he thought was a friend and it wasn't a very great thing for him. But this goes to school not listening. So I go into school and say, right, outside of school, this boy did this to my son. Yeah. He's now terrified of that boy. Because he thought he was a friend. Yeah. It also affected him in as much as he was questioning every friendship he'd ever had.
Oh.
Because if that lad could do this to him, who he thought was a friend, then of course all his other friends must hate him in the same way. So he suddenly lost all confidence in all his friends, all his support network went. So they said, okay, there's nothing we can do about it. That lad has problems of his own. Blah, 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 you know, but we'll understand if he's not coming in for a little while. Then they offered us some out of school stuff that he could do.
Yeah.
Which was going to a climbing wall. And they were taking a certain little group of lads to this climbing wall as part of just like an out of school thing to do.
Yeah.
So we turn up at the climbing wall. It's taken me 2 or 3 days to convince James that it'll be okay. And there was another friend of his going who's autistic. And this is going to be fine. I will stay with him. So I'm having days off work to do this as well.
Yeah.
Third person that gets off the bus as we're sat in the car park. The boy that gave him shit. I'm like, so do you just not listen to what's going on? It was insane. And of course, after that was it. Done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not doing anything. And it got to the point where we couldn't do work at home, nothing. It actually, and I'm sorry if this is a trigger warning or whatever, but he did make an attempt on his own life. And that was the point where...
How old was he?
Old would he have been? Was he now 15? 12, 13?
Oh, my God.
So we've been talking about not wanting to be around for a while. Well, since he was about six.
Really?
And we always used to... We didn't try to make a big thing out of it. We just kind of took it in that way of you can't explain how big the emotions you are having are at the minute, the anxiety, etc. So the only way you know how to do that is to say, I wish I'd never been born. I wish I could kill myself. It would be so much easier if I wasn't here. Okay, so we took that as communication. But then slowly but surely, and especially through seniors, so back end of juniors, when they started SATs especially, because that ramped everything up a little bit.
Yeah.
As soon as they started senior school, it would be somewhere between a meltdown and a panic attack at night.
Yeah.
As he was going to bed. And it'd be, Mum, just go downstairs and get me the kitchen knife. Just do it. Just go and do it. Because the best thing I can do is slit my throat. Best for everybody if that's what I do. And that would go on for 2 hours of an evening, three or four times a week. And this is all through trauma and anxiety from school.
Did you get any help? Was there any help?
No, I got support from my friends and I rang, you know, we went to the doctors, but they were like, I can try and refer him to CAMHS, which is Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services.
Yeah.
But he's not bad enough.
That's not bad enough.
I know I have friends whose children self-harm on a regular basis, and that's not bad enough.
Oh, my God.
So there was one time, unfortunately, I think he was... So every morning he would be determined that today was the day he was going to try and go to school.
Yeah.
Because he was battling with himself. School is where you're meant to be.
Yeah.
It's the rule that you have to go to school.
Yeah.
But he's battling that side with the fact that as soon as he would put his leg in his school trousers, so he'd get up and go, right, Mum, I'm going to go and have a shower and we're going to do this today. Even if I just go in for 5 minutes, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
So, but as soon as he went to put his school uniform on, it just imploded. And it just so happened, unfortunately, this day that his uniform happened to be downstairs. And he imploded and he then went into these self-destructive panic thing.
Yeah.
And of course, where we were, the kitchen's just down the hall. So he could go and get his own knives today.
Yeah.
And I literally, I mean, I'm only 5'2" myself. I'm not massive. So had to kind of go and rugby tackle him and sit on him in the kitchen until this panic attack stopped. Because I know if I'd have let him get to that kitchen drawer, that would have been it. And then as soon as it's over, it's all like, oh, my God, Mum, I'm so sorry I did that to you. I can't believe it. I don't know where that came from.
Yeah.
There's that instant regret. You know, I know it was a cry for help, but it was like the biggest shout for help that he could possibly do. And I just, it scares me to think that if I hadn't been there in that split second, if I hadn't managed to catch him, I'd have been probably having a very different conversation today.
Was he, when you first noticed maybe there was something different about him, how do you get it diagnosed? Was that a long process of...
Yeah, I mean, again, so we go back to infants. We always knew... And we always said this with the greatest love. He was our little weirdo right from the beginning. He wasn't your typical autistic kid. He didn't line things up. He didn't. He did used to rock quite a bit as a baby, but we just kind of assumed that he always wanted to be up on his feet. So the sort of rocking was his way of kind of getting up. And when he was a toddler, we had to stop it because he'd sit on the sofa. He'd rock forward to be almost up on his feet. And then swing backwards enough and hit the back of the sofa with enough power that it would tip the sofa up. And he'd sit and do that for like 5 or 10 minutes, and then he'd be like, all right, I'm fine now. So yeah, he always looked at the world slightly differently. We always knew his thought processes were a little outside the box. He once said to me, we heard a cuckoo once. He was only about 3 or 4. We heard a cuckoo once. And I said, oh, listen, it's a cuckoo. You can hear it because it says cuckoo, cuckoo. And he just looked at me and went, oh, Mum, isn't that bird clever? Why is that, son? Because whenever he came out with things like that, you were like, where's this going?
Yeah.
Why is that some shine? Well, it's learned to say its own name. So his thought process wasn't, it's called a cuckoo because it makes a cuckoo noise. It was called a cuckoo, then it learned how to say cuckoo.
Well.
Yeah, so wherever you thought a conversation was going to go, that's very rarely where it went.
Yeah.
I remember him coming home from juniors and they'd been doing about the Holocaust. They were doing about World War II. We'd had a letter home saying, yes, we were going to do about the Holocaust. So when he walked in and he was like, oh, Mum, we're going to have a word about Hitler.
Oh, yeah.
Right, okay. So I go and make myself a cup of coffee. I'm like, just wait a minute. I'll go and get you a snack. I'll go and get a coffee. Then we'll sit and have a chat. So I go and make myself a cup of coffee and I'm staring out the kitchen window thinking, how am I going to have this conversation with a 6-year-old about why was it okay to kill all these people? And so I'm like, I have no idea what I'm going to do. So I come back in the room and I sit down, I take that deep breath as you do. And I went, right then. So what is it about Hitler then that's bothering you? Have you seen his moustache, Mum? Yeah. Have you ever seen it from the side? Because it's really thick if you look at it from the side. I'm like, yeah. Why did none of his friends ever tell him how stupid he looked? And I said, was Hitler a good man or a bad man? Oh, he was a bad man, Mum. Do you not know what he did to the Jews? He was awful. He was a really, really horrible guy. And I said, yeah, I kind of know all that. And he went, and so I said, well, if you were one of his friends, would you have told him how stupid he looked with that moustache? And he just went, yeah, I get your point. And then just went off upstairs. So you kind of knew that the way he saw the world was...
Yeah,
slightly different. So, but the one thing that used to worry us a lot was dress-up days at school. He just would not get dressed up. He would literally just make himself a dead weight on the floor, couldn't cope with dress-up days at all.
Yeah.
But through infants, they'd always said, well, you know, some children don't like them. He'll grow out of it. And he had all these little quirks, and we'd had him diagnosed with the dyslexia, and he was quite an emotional child. He would quite cry quite easily. But, like, sometimes at really weird times, it was more just that the emotions that he was feeling were just so big, the only way he could release it was to cry.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily a sad thing. He might be excited. He might be happy. Yeah. But yeah, he was quite a clingy child to me. We had a lot of problems with separation anxiety.
Okay.
So again, it's your first child. It's your only child. So when a school says to you, he'll grow out of it.
Yeah.
You trust them, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. So when we got into junior school and it was the first dress up day, he made me go into school. He says, you've got to go and tell me, I can't remember her name now, but his Y3 teacher. Don't forget, we've got to go and tell Mrs. So-and-so how I deal with dress up dates. Because what he used to do is we'd buy an appropriate t-shirt and jeans. So if it's superhero day, we'd have a superhero t-shirt and jeans.
Yeah.
The hard one was when I had to try and find a t-shirt for a 5-year-old with a realistic picture of Sir Isaac Newton on it. Because it was about scientific heroes. And he wouldn't have a cartoon one. It had got to be a realistic one. Cost me £22 and I made him wear it until it literally fell to pieces. That's what you do with a day. So I go into this teacher's class. I should really remember her name because she was lovely. And I said to her, I said, you know, we've got this issue. This is how we cope with it. And she says, oh, you know, again, kids don't like it. But once they get dressed up, once they get here, they're fine. I said, no, you're not getting this. He literally won't come into school that day. If we cannot agree that this T-shirt, because it would make me take the T-shirt in and get teacher to check that it was okay. This is how his anxiety would manifest itself. I said, so we're going to have to see the T-shirt. Then, you check it. You tell him in front of him, you have to say it's okay, because he won't trust me to pass the message on. And she said, okay, does he do that about anything else? And I said, well, maybe if we're in a pub and we've ordered chicken nuggets and chicken goujons come instead, he won't eat them. He loves chicken goujons, but he was expecting chicken nuggets. And if they're not chicken nuggets, then he won't eat them. And, this is a problem and that's a problem. And we have to kind of, a lot of our day is built around making sure he's going to be okay with what's going on. So we have to have plan A, B and C if we're going somewhere. And so if he wants to go to the park, we have to go, well, that's fine if the weather's okay, but let's get a plan together just in case it's raining. Because I have had to spend days at parks in the pouring rain because I promised we could go to the park that day.
Yeah.
And changing that was too much to cope with. Wow. And he would go to the park in the rain because he loved the rain.
Yeah.
And she basically said to me, she said, well, you do realise he should have grown out of that by now when they keep telling you that. And I said, right. And she said, do you think we really ought to kind of see somebody about this? So she then, through that, I got referred to the school nurse system, then on to the paediatrician. We went to see somebody purely about anxiety. That's what she dealt with. So you'd go and see her if they had SATs anxiety or things like that. And she was the one then that said, no, there's more to this. When you're telling me what he gets anxious about, there's definitely more to this.
Yeah.
So that's when we got referred to CAMHS. But when you're looking at a couple of months between each of those stages and then getting referred to CAMHS is months and months wait. I mean, now it's somewhere around about 2 years.
Yeah.
It was better then. It was about 6 months. It took us about a year from end to end to get that report in our hands to actually say, yes, he's autistic. But his paediatrician was very good, and he actually wrote a letter to say, although he doesn't have an official diagnosis just yet, he has so many traits, basically, that you need to treat him as being autistic until it's proven wrong.
Yes, okay.
Rather than waiting for it to be proven right.
Yeah.
So he was really, we've been quite lucky in the professionals we've come across. I've heard some horror stories through the years. Yeah. We just happen to have had a really good bunch of professionals that have jumped through hoops to help us. Even his psychiatrist that he has now, when we were doing the EHCP, if there was ever anything that we'd spoken about that wasn't written down on paper, I'd only got to email her and go, could you just do me a letter that says, yes, he does, you've noticed this in sessions and things like that. And she would absolutely.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of when it happened. So back in junior school.
So then what happens with, when you presented the school with that, do they take any kind of medication for anything?
Not for autism. No.
What about for his anxiety? Or did you choose not to medicate?
When you get your autistic diagnosis from CAMHS, it's basically, yes, your child's autistic. There's nothing we can do about it. Bye. So you get signed off from CAMHS at that point. You get offered maybe a couple of kind of little courses that you can go on. But the more I've learned as we've gone along, the more I realise that those courses need looking at, because none of them are run by autistic people. From what I can tell, they don't have any input from autistic people. It's what scientists think that autism is.
Oh, right.
Which is very different.
Yep.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're okay, but they don't really kind of, they'll give you a broad overview of what it is, but you are basically left to it at that point. Because, and I get it, there's nothing the NHS can do, absolutely nothing. There's no medication that's going to help.
Yeah. But and is there any support? Like, what if you were to say, I can't deal with this? Is there help?
Do you know? I'm not sure. I don't think there is. When I hear the horror stories from, you know, friends and people that I've met through the support groups and things. As I say, these people that have got kids that are self-harming,
yeah,
and are just told that, the you know, it's not bad enough to get onto the CAMHS list. You are, I mean, you've got your GP, if you've got a great GP,
yeah,
and if you've got, again, I always encourage people to reach out to other parents.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Because I wouldn't have, without the ladies I met at PAN, I wouldn't know half of what I know now.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even know an EHCP was a thing.
Yeah.
Never mind that we could get one. You know, you are left out in the middle of nowhere. And it's up to you. And this is where a lot of problems can start, with things like trying to find cures for autism. There is no cure for autism.
Yeah, yeah. Literally what is autism?
So autism is, it's a wiring, well, not even a problem. It's, the way I like to explain it is, it's like you have an iPhone and you have your Android phone.
Yep.
They both work on entirely different systems and they both work in entirely different ways.
Yeah.
But they both get there in the end. They both make phone calls and they both make texts. They just do it in their own way.
Yeah.
So in a, I'm going to say a neurotypical brain, because this encompasses ADHD, Tourette's, stammers, sensory processing disorder, all sorts of different things.
Yeah.
It's actually a hardware problem. Your brain has just made different connections to a neurotypical brain.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And actually, you know, there's a big sort of campaign to even change those words, because there's probably as many neurodiverse people out there as there is neurotypical people.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So it, we're trying to kind of work towards a society that encompasses all of them. So there's a discussion about whether things like autism, ADHD should be classed as disabilities.
Right, yep.
Now, you obviously get people that have a lot of complex issues. So they'll have autism, they'll have maybe some type of what's called global delay, global development delay, which is the overt sort of umbrella term for those that have suffered brain issues that maybe mean that they'll only ever be at the functioning age of 10 or 11 or 5 or 6, you know. And you will get some for whom life, no matter how much life changes, society changes, they are always going to need care continually.
Yes, yeah.
You know. Really, we're talking about the people like myself, like James, like a lot of people I know, who can function.
Yep.
So you then start to look at what's known as a societal disability. So the disability doesn't come from us. Our brains aren't stopping us from performing daily activities. It's actually society that's stopping us.
Yeah.
So there's even people in wheelchairs, for example, who wouldn't necessarily see themselves as disabled because actually their workplaces are completely accessible, their homes are completely accessible, you know, so they don't see themselves as disabled because they can carry on a life like you or I can, you know, with functioning limbs. And what we're kind of, what my interest in is trying to kind of get that idea out to people that just because somebody says they're autistic, just because somebody says they've got ADHD, it shouldn't be a problem. It should be as easy as somebody saying to you, do you know what, I'm a bit grumpy in the morning. So first, when I first get to work, just let me have my cup of coffee and things before you start talking to me.
Yeah.
You know, if you went into a job and said that, your work colleagues would go, yeah, great, no problem.
Yeah.
You know, it's just you. It's just your thing, you know.
Yeah.
And that's how ADHD and autism and neurodiversity should really be kind of looked at.
Yeah.
You know, that if you need an office in the corner with a quieter light, and maybe you need to wear your headphones at work, that should be it. That should be fine.
Yeah.
If that means that you can access work,
yeah,
you know, that should be as much of a conversation as you have to have.
Yeah.
You know, just like, oh, that's me. That's how I need to work. You see what I mean?
Yeah, no, completely.
Yeah.
Completely.
There's a guy in Sheffield. You can actually do a degree in autism at Sheffield University.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and there's a guy there called, oh, gosh, his name's just gone completely out of my head.
Oh, I don't know.
It'll come to me in a minute.
Story of my life.
Yeah.
He's
a fantastic speaker. He's autistic himself. All the people that run the course are autistic. A lot of the people on the course are autistic. And he said, you know, I didn't have to go to a GP to be diagnosed as gay.
Yeah.
But I had to go to a GP to be diagnosed as autistic. Why won't people just believe that I'm autistic?
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's a perfectly valid point. If we could even get to that stage of, I mean, really, even now, having to come out as gay shouldn't even be a thing anymore. It's nobody's business.
Yeah.
You never have to come out as straight, do you? So,
yeah.
But even if we could get to the point where people could just come out as autistic without needing that document from a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
Saying this person's autistic.
Yeah.
You know, but whether that all happened in my lifetime, I've no idea.
I think it's more of a conversation. I think we're a lot more aware of stuff like that. But when we first spoke about doing this podcast, we spoke about the ADHD, didn't we?
Hmm.
And now my friend, she's 100% ADHD, but she can't afford to pay for a diagnosis. So
no.
Like, you know.
Well, that's the stage that I'm at. So through doing all the deep dives, and because I got obviously very obsessed with helping James the best way I could.
Yeah.
Because obviously, to my horror now, but at the time it made sense, my idea as a parent was that I had to change James to help him fit in with everybody else.
Yes. Yep.
No. I had to give James the tools to allow him to give him the confidence to self-advocate, to be able to change his area into something that made him comfortable.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, there's a very kind of twee meme that goes around with autism that is, I wouldn't change my child for the world, but I'd change the world for my child.
Yeah.
And take the tweeness out of that. At its heart, that's absolutely what you need to do as a parent.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, it goes into should there be a cure for autism? I'm very much of a thing of, do you know what? I'm sure there's some people out there that wish their autism didn't exist. So for those people to have that choice, there needs to be research into a cure. I'm not saying a cure is needed. I said to Jane, you know, I say to James quite regularly, would you have your, you know, if I could give you a pill that would take the autism away, would you take it? And he's like, nah, because I don't know who I'd be if I didn't have the autism. And that's true. But,
I mean, if it is how your brain's wired.
Yeah, but at one point, I'm not saying there's anywhere near a cure on the table.
Yeah.
But at one point, we never would have thought you could rip somebody's heart out and replace it with a dead person's and that person could go on and live.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's important that choice is given.
Yes, yeah.
But I also don't believe it's a parent's choice to, I don't think it should be given until that child is 16, 17, 18.
Yeah.
It has to be a personal choice.
Yeah.
I think a healthier way to look at it is to try and change society and to stop. There's a thing called masking, which is where an autistic person will literally burn out because they are wearing this mask of being normal.
Yeah.
So they go out in the morning and they put this mask of normality on. And again, the way I can get my head around that is go back to the 40s and 50s. When you'd got a lot of gay men that were entering into marriages.
Yeah, yeah.
That weren't real.
Yeah.
They were trying their absolute hardest to be normal. They were having kids. They were, you know, they were getting married. And unfortunately, at that point, you know, the suicide rate amongst 30-year-old men at that point was horrendous. And it's the same with autism. You're far likely to lose your child to suicide.
Yeah. I'd no and idea.
Yeah, the suicide rate amongst neurodivergent people is horrific. Yeah. And it's purely because society wants them to fit in and they yeah. can't. It's too hard. You know, it's like you pretending, having to pretend each and every day that you are not the person you are.
Yeah, yeah.
That you're, I don't know. I mean, spin it the other way around. If you had to go outside every day and pretend you were a Nazi, how the hell would you cope with that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like being an undercover cop, but 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
365 days a year.
Oh, my God. Well, that would drive you mad, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why, that's where the anxiety, the mental yeah. illness, you know, the mental health issues come in. It's not from the autism. The autism is not the cause of that.
Yeah.
Society is yes. the cause of
yeah.
that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. So what happened then? So obviously he didn't go to school for 3 years. They had the wonderful day out where they invited his bully.
Yep.
So that was fabulous. The end of the activity. So then what else, what happened after that day?
So we had the 3 years. He just shut down completely. He very rarely came out of his bedroom. He just locked himself in there with his Xbox. And all we could do as parents and was give him that space.
Yeah.
I absolutely drew a line, especially after the attempt to take his life.
Yeah.
I just went, I'm not doing this. I am not, I don't care if I have to go to jail for it.
Yeah.
I am not forcing my child into a situation that makes him so upset that he would rather die.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
no law, no fine, nothing is going to make me do that.
Yeah.
Because... I mean, it strikes me as absolutely ludicrous that's even a thing, you know, that I would even feel, be made to feel that way.
Did anyone pressure you into, or did they kind of accept it and not
say anything? It was a very gentle pressure. But in the end, I did turn around, because I'm quite forthright. I'm quite a fierce little mama bear when I need to be.
Yeah.
And I quite honestly said that to them. I said, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
And luckily... They were understanding. All the people that I had anything to do with had kids of their own,
yeah,
and kind of got it when I put it in that thing. So there was a lot of hoops we used to have to jump through. So the attendance officer used to have to come round once a week. Luckily, we literally live about 2 minutes away from school, so she's just okay. pop round on a lunchtime. James wouldn't come downstairs. The only thing he'd do is actually stand at the top of the stairs.
Yeah.
And so she'd stand at the front door because she didn't want her in the house because she was too related to school.
Yeah.
And she would shout up saying, James, are you all right, sweetheart? And James would go, yeah, I'm fine. It's all right. My mum's not tried to kill me this week, so it's all right. Because we'd explain to him why she needed to come round. Because it yeah. was to make sure he was okay. Because yeah, obviously yeah. you get the horrendous situation yes. when yes. they're not.
Yeah, yeah.
So his way of coping with that was making a joke out of
yeah.
it. Yeah,
yeah.
Mum's not killing me. It's okay.
Yeah.
So that's what we had to do.
Had you told them that he'd had an attempt on
yeah.
his own life?
Yeah, I literally, my mum came round straight away. And because James had this massive panic attack and then basically just went to sleep. It okay. literally drained him.
Yeah.
So while he was asleep, I was still shaking like this. I was in a mess. So I went straight round to school because it's the only place I could think of to go to this SEND teacher, to his pastoral head, and just yep. go, I just need to see them. I can't explain to you. I just need to see them.
Yeah.
And they were superb. And they said, right, get onto CAMS straight away. He was already on the CAMS waiting list for anxiety, but we had been warned it would be anything up to 18 months before we could see somebody.
Right.
So CAMS has an emergency hotline, if you like, and I rang yeah. them and they were superb. I just literally sat in my car in the school car park sobbing down the phone because I didn't want to do it at home because I didn't want James to,
yeah.
to kind of realise what had happened because I knew he would blame himself for upsetting me.
Yeah.
And they said, we're there for in the moment. So if he'd have barricaded himself into the kitchen with the knife, yep. threatening to do something, I would ring the CAMS hotline. They would come round straight away.
Okay, yep.
Because the moment had passed, they weren't the people I needed to speak to. She said, but one thing I can do for you is I will expedite your referral to CAMHS. I can see where you are. I found you on the list. You're still a way away, but I will put you now on an emergency footing.
Okay.
So it took him trying to take his own life for us to get in to see CAMHS.
Okay.
Quite frankly. So within 6 weeks,
okay,
we got to CAMHS. But that's still, if you imagine if your child was trying to do that every day.
Yeah,
that's 6 weeks of doing that every day.
Well, the fact that they're like, well, because he's not actually done it and he's still not trying to, then we can't help you right now. I mean, that whole thing of they literally have to. Can you imagine being that person on the phone saying, I can't help you?
Oh, they are. Honestly, they're amazing people. And I don't want to get political, but child mental health services are fucked. They have been, you know, they have had money taken away from them left, right and centre. Yeah. And with more and more children, especially after COVID, more and more children coming out with these things and being recognised, which is a good thing, because I think there's probably a lot of kids that are in juvenile detention. I think there's probably a lot of young adults that are in prisons and things now because they weren't understood as kids, you know, that they started to play truant from school because it was too traumatic to go to. And therefore you end up in the wrong crowd and you end up in a problem.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's always been there. I just think we're a bit more kind of recognising it a bit more now.
Yeah.
So we went to see CAMHS. CAMHS were lovely. And very, very soon we did have a meeting with school with, well, there was the SEN, the head teacher, his pastoral head, his CAMHS worker, myself, and I actually took my mum with me just for a bit of backup because by this time you're so used to having to fight for everything.
Yeah.
Ringing, writing, literally putting things as plainly as possible. I always used to try not to be antagonistic, but I would always say, whatever you're about to offer me, if it's got anything to do with bringing James back into this building, I'm not doing it until he's right.
Yeah.
You can say it so you can tick your box, but it's not going to happen. I can tell you now.
Yeah.
Until he's got the help he needs, he is not setting foot back in that building. So I'd gone to this meeting waiting for that same fight.
Yeah.
And within two sentences, which was Miss Milovic, the SEN, saying, I think James needs to be away from school on long-term, basically long-term sick.
Yeah.
But there's only the CAMHS worker can do that. Ailey is CAMHS worker then looking up and going, I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
Suddenly I was like, oh, I was here for a fight. I literally walked out with my mum and went, what can I fight with you about now? Please just have a fight in the car. It was so bizarre. I just got all this energy and all this stuff I wanted to say, and they just kind of did it all in two sentences. So that was astonishing. That was amazing. That was a brilliant day. And again, apart from the fact that the attendance officer had to keep coming round, we had to attend CAMHS, obviously.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the way it went for quite a while.
Did he have work to do at home?
We had something called the out of school teacher, I think she was. It was OOST, OOST is OOST support worker. So she would come down, she would come round a couple of times a week, school have to pay for that. She'd send us work to do every day. But it soon became obvious that even that was too much. Even it would just, he'd do it, he'd try his hardest, would get maybe half an hour out of him and then 2 hours of just complete exhaustion.
Yeah.
Maybe a meltdown. But 2 hours of issues afterwards. Yeah. And it just got to the point where it wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
She used to come round and we'd play things like Scrabble or Jenga or just anything to keep some sort of timetable going.
Yeah.
And try and keep the game so that they were at least, it was at least working on maybe his hand-eye coordination.
Yeah.
Or his spellings a little bit or whatever. But eventually that kind of petered. Anyway, COVID hit. Well, no, actually, we then discovered his new school, UTC, which was sort of set up a bit like a technical college, but you can access them from year nine.
Okay.
And so we found out that there he would do maths, English and science GCSEs, but then you could choose a speciality on top of that. So rather than doing loads of GCSEs he couldn't see the point in.
Yep.
Because they are stubborn. He is a stubborn monkey. He's got to be able to see the point in anything, which I kind of get.
Yeah.
He was like, Mom, I don't like foreign food, so I'm never going to go to France, so why do I need to learn French? And as a parent, you're sat there going, don't know. Literally can't, no. But we discovered UTC, where he could do digital media as like a BTEC type thing.
Yeah.
So instead of doing all that, he'd do his master's English science, and then he could do things like his photography GCSE, his art GCSE, and then this BTEC in kind of digital media and anything from game development to website development to music video
making. That's amazing.
Astonishing place. Absolutely brilliant. And so this was the start of year nine. So we went in. They knew that he'd not been to school really for year eight. So they didn't put any pressure on him at all to have to go there 5 days a week straight away. So I think we eventually built it up to about 3 days a week.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'd gone back in the September, managed about 5 weeks, and then somebody in his year caught COVID. And it was at that time where if somebody did that, the whole year had to stay off.
Yep.
That was on the Thursday. We spoke to school, realised that the person who'd caught COVID, he wouldn't have had anything to do with.
Yep.
So we went to stay with my mum for a couple of, mum and dad, they only live just around the corner, but just for childcare, because my dad's disabled, he was in our bubble and James is in their bubble.
Yeah.
So he went to go and stay with them for a couple of days, decided he was going to stay over the weekend because they treat him like little Lord Fauntleroy and whatever age he was, 13. Of course you want your nan running up and downstairs bringing your fizzy pop.
Yeah.
So we said, fine, but that means you're going to have to stay Monday, Tuesday. Not a problem. So Monday night comes. I'm an osteopath. My husband's a driving examiner. So we're both in the middle of the public.
Yeah.
We sat on the sofa watching telly and we're both kind of like, but starting to take the mickey out of each other, going, oh, that's it. Oh, you've got COVID. Oh. Didn't think anything of it until Tuesday morning when my husband woke me up and went, how are you feeling? I went, well, apart from the fact you've woke me up at 6 o'clock on the morning, I'm actually not feeling that great. Booked the COVID tests. Yeah, we'd both got COVID.
Yeah.
So that then meant that he'd got to stay over with my mum and dad for 2 weeks, which he was not expecting. But by the end of the first week, his anxiety had got so bad that he had decided that we hadn't let him come home because his dad had died. He'd killed his dad by bringing COVID home from school.
Oh my God.
And even though his dad was spending time playing Xbox with him online in the evening to try and, you know, sort of reassure him that everything was okay, he had decided we were paying somebody to do that and that they'd got a voice changer on their Xbox that was making him sound like his dad. Now, you talk to James about that now, and he thinks that's hilarious because he knows that there's no way that could happen. But when you've got anxiety, it just throws you off the edge of the cliff before you even know where you are. And he was always a catastrophizer. It was always going to be the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
So, of course, after that, he wasn't going back to school because there was no way he was bringing COVID home.
Yeah.
So that was him out of it altogether. And it wasn't until, but obviously COVID was awful anyway. So school were, and it wasn't until they were starting to look at kids coming back into school, because it wasn't long after that before they closed the schools down altogether.
Oh, okay. So this was at the very start of COVID.
Yeah, this was, it was September, October 2020.
Okay.
Right at the very beginning.
Yeah.
So, yeah, after that, he was not going back to school.
Yeah.
And the whole concept of school became so traumatic that we couldn't even mention the word in the house. And he'd, otherwise he'd just get into a panic attack and that'd be it, he'd be gone. So the Senko at his new school got in touch and said, well, to be absolutely honest with you, he's not really been to school since Y7.
Yeah.
We're looking at going into the start of GCSE years.
Yeah.
He's got so much to catch up, we actually don't know where to put him if he did come back.
Yeah.
We have no idea where we would put him. And I was so glad for that honesty.
Yeah.
Because I was wondering that as well.
Yeah.
You know, because by then you've not even got, you've lost all that background that builds you up to what you then need to learn for GCSE.
Yeah.
You've not got that grounding at all. And that's when we did the EHCP, which took us 6 months to sort out. We also had to have a fight because of the school I wanted him to go into. But he's now at a fantastic school, about half an hour's drive away, that is actually a ride in stables. And the school is actually a set of porter cabins in the stable yard.
Yeah.
So it's about as non-schooly as it could possibly look. Okay. It doesn't function as a riding stables anymore, but they've still got all the horses that they had when it was a riding stables. They're actually now more into, they're in part of a breeding program for a rare breed of a bit like an Exmoor pony, you know, the new forest ponies. So they've got quite a few of those as well. So basically, the kids can do maths, English and science there.
Yeah.
But it's linked in a lot with going and feeding the horses, going to do stable yard work, going and feed the chickens.
Yeah.
Go for a walk. They've got 40 acres.
Wow.
So as part of their timetable, there is obviously maths, English, science. There's no sort of, it's not taken for granted that you'll do GCSEs. If you don't, you don't.
Yeah.
They'll facilitate it if you want to. If the kid themselves actually says, I want to have a go at that, they can facilitate that. But there's no expectation of that's what you'll do at the end of year 11.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? So that takes that out of the, he'll come at the least, they'll come out with some bits of paper that say they can read, write and add up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but my idea about education now is he's 15. He's got a lot of life to go yet.
Yeah.
And as soon as he kind of finds where his happy place is going to be, whatever it is he feels he wants to do, at that point he's going to be far more motivated to go out and get those GCSEs he needs.
Yeah.
He can do them at the local college. He can do them wherever.
Yeah.
It's not a problem. There's absolutely no reason why you absolutely have to have your GCSEs by the time you're 16.
Yeah.
There's nothing written down anywhere.
It's
just, that's the way it's worked out.
Yeah.
So, and they absolutely do concentrate entirely on the mental health of the child.
Yeah.
So even if he was in a maths class, for example, and he was getting a bit overwhelmed by it, he can just get up, find a TA or one of the, he's actually all right to go into the stables, not on his own, but go and find one of the stable girls and just ask him if there's some jobs to do, or can he groom, his favorite horse is Magpie, and he's going to kill me for not knowing the other one, but yeah, he can just go, can I just groom Magpie for a bit, and you know, one of the TAs will come out and they'll have a chat actually while they're doing that.
Yeah.
So there's that sort of equine therapy thing going on at the same time. And he's, I can't tell you, he's been there since just before Easter.
Yeah.
And he said to me about 2 weeks ago, he came up to me and went, "Mum, I don't want to frighten you." And I was like, "Oh, Jesus, here we go again. I don't want to frighten you, but I'm really missing school and I can't wait till I go back." And that's the first time in 15 years he has ever said that.
Wow, oh, isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
How often does he go there?
At the minute, he's there 2 days a week.
Okay.
We also go on, so he goes Tuesdays, Wednesday morning, we go to something called Sparky Ink, which is a digital arts studio in the town near where we live, but school count that as a school attendance. And then he okay. goes to school in the afternoon. So there he gets to, again, does anything from digital art to stop frame animation to
wow.
the things that make him happy, basically. Yeah. Games design, all sorts yep. of stuff.
So is that what he's into?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He loves his art and he loves, he's just, but even that, it's like, I can't do it to relax though, Mum, because he gets so frustrated that what's in his head is not what comes out on the paper.
Okay.
And we're having to work really hard at kind of saying to him, yeah, but that's because you need to practice.
Yeah.
You know, he sees a lot of these YouTube videos where graffiti artists will go, and it looks amazing.
Yeah.
And what you don't see is the other 100 ones that went really wrong first.
Yeah. And the years you know. That they've been practicing
yeah.
for as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we're working a lot on that at the moment. So yeah, I can see him going into something like that. But he would want to do, he loves gaming. He's got yeah. friends all over the world as far as gaming's concerned. And we've never limited that time because that's his happy place.
Yeah.
You know, he enjoys that.
Yeah.
And it's his way of being social because there's no face-to-face yeah. stuff going on. It's all in your ears. So yeah. it's fine. But yeah, he would want to, he wouldn't necessarily want to come up with the idea of the game, although he does have some ideas. And he definitely doesn't want to get involved in the programming because as he goes, he says, "Mum, I find it hard enough to write in English. I'm never going to be yeah. able to do computer stuff." Because of the dyslexia. But what he would love to do is be the one that gets the mood boards together as to how the characters might look, how the background might be, have
yeah.
a look at the music, have a look. So he'd really want to kind of deal with the feel of a game.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Yeah,
so whether
yeah.
it's be a dark and sinister thing or a light and silly thing or, you know,
yeah.
that sort of thing. That's what he'd love to. But I can equally see him working... For like the RSPCA or something like that, because he just has such an affinity with animals now as well.
Yeah.
But whatever he wants to do, he'll do.
Yeah.
You know? But
yeah.
all I can say now is I'm so pleased he's a happy boy.
Hi. Yeah, so that's a lovely Vanessa. Like I said, if you want to get in touch with either of us, please do. If you have any guest suggestions for me or if you would like to come on and talk to me, I'd love that. Get in touch. Please share the podcast. Please subscribe to the podcast. Because then you just get it. You haven't got to look for it. I mean, that saves you 5 minutes. But yeah, I hope you're good.
Work.
Stay safe, stay sane. Big love. Sorry I'm drugged up Work. And rambling. But yeah, I'll see Work. You next week for part 2. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.